acting brand new like you never knew that you like them thick. I've been carrying this weight in a world beneath these braids, and I'm confused. Would you take the pain that came with all the parts you wanna claim for you? You want my thighs, you want my stride, but not this melanin. You want my hair, but you don't care for this complexion. I'm a black woman. I'm a black woman. Hard bread fed, sweet tea sipping, Nubian queen with the skin that glistens. I'm a black woman. 16 sitting on a cold floor in the corner after school, recovering from your cover up when you told me I wasn't right for you. It wasn't hard to believe, 'cause when I watch TV I would never see a leading lady look like me. Familiar package with less pigment, I nicked it, it's just reality.
YouTube Music Premium vous donne le contrôle total sur votre musique. Écoutez votre musique sans annonce, téléchargez-la en illimité, profitez-en hors ligne ou en arrière-plan.
Right, you are listening to the Local Journalism Initiative Roundup here on CKUT broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at CKUT.ca. I'm your host, Jules Buzel, and today on the program, I'm going to be sharing some of the stories I've been working on here at CKUT with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. We're going to start off with a new plan for Montreal's nightlife and how folks in the sector are responding. The rest of the show is going to be about the issue that everybody is concerned about, tenants' rights under threat from the new Bill 31 and a wave of evictions sweeping the city. But let's get right into it. Last week, the Police Montréal administration published their draft nightlife policy. It's a high-level document with few concrete details that we will likely know more when the policy is presented to the public next Tuesday. What we do know so far is that the city has floated the Latin Quarter as a 24-hour zone, with other nightlife zones to be decided on by the boroughs. They also want an easier process to respond to requests for events between 3 and 8 a.m., and they're exploring more options for nighttime travel. But what do nightlife actors really need? Today, I'm joined by Sergio Da Silva, who runs Turbo House, and Oliver Anthony, co-founder of Fantôme, to get a better idea. So thank you both for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right. Oliver, I'm just going to start with you. So you are a co-founder of Fantôme, which is a grassroots collective for nightlife artists, workers, organizers in the city. What are some of the issues that are facing the industry at that grassroots level?
Yeah, so some of the most frequently mentioned things in the survey that we ran last year, mentioned by more than half of respondents across demographics and unprompted, because this was a sort of like open-ended survey. Was access to safe space. That was really like the top concern. And, you know, following that, the things that are kind of less surprising, things like transit, harassment, harm reduction, things that are covered, some more, some less, by some of the groups working on nightlife in Montreal right now.
Yeah. What do you mean when you're talking about safe space in particular? Like, what would that look like for nightlife workers or organizers in the city?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it really depends who you ask, but I think for a lot of people in the underground, it means spaces that are outside of the mainstream, and spaces that maybe reflect their values and their identity a bit more and are safer for them to move through and have, you know, experiences of self-expression within.
Yeah. Sergio, I'd like to hear from you because, you know, you run Turbo House, which is a venue, I guess. Well, maybe not exactly a nightlife venue, but a bar that hosts shows on Saint-Denis. And, you know, you guys made headlines late last year over a noise complaint, and it really sparked a discussion about the city's nightlife policy in general and how they police noise and bars and venues in the city. I'm wondering if you can tell me about that experience a little bit and what it showed you, I guess, about what needs to change here.
I mean, ultimately, the experience was very unpleasant. Like, what happened with us specifically was a new building had gone up during the pandemic, and who had moved in there was basically lots of foreign students, so lots of French students, essentially just French students who had moved in. And what I had found, like, extremely frustrating was that they're all transient, right? So, like, nobody's going to stick around for more than 6, 7, 8 months. So you have people making noise complaints at a place that I've existed for 10 years, and they're going to give me these problems, and then they're going to leave in about 2 months. So I found that to be incredibly frustrating. But all in all, you know, the city did their due diligence. They came around. I eventually had got in touch with the particular inspector who was handling my case. I told him what my plan was, which is essentially what I do with the other tenants who are in the building that I'm in, is they all have my phone number, they all know how to get in touch with me immediately, and they know to get in touch with me immediately if there's an issue before going to the police. I was going to do the same thing with this building, but unfortunately, there's like, you know, 100 students who are living there and just changing every 8 months. It's impossible to sort of like create a dialogue or any sort of like community there. But the person was nice enough to call them and to let them know if they had any other issues to call me directly. And since then, there has not been an issue.
I remember in that whole debacle, you know, there was a lot of emphasis put on the fact that, you know, you guys are on Saint-Denis, you're in a big nightlife zone where the city has been encouraging folks in the industry to move to host events. And despite that, you know, you were still getting hit with this noise complaint. It was still possible for your business to be threatened, basically, in this way. One of the big parts of the new draft policy, the new nightlife policy the city is looking to get consultations on, is the introduction of 24-hour zones, specific parts of the city where boroughs can say, you know, we want nightlife to happen here. But I think what's interesting about your example is you were already in a kind of nightlife zone and you still got hit with this complaint. What do you think about, like, are the zones the problem? What does this approach kind of say to you?
I mean, ultimately, there has to be this sort of harmony between the people who are living there and the people who operate businesses and want to, like, enjoy themselves. And, like, I used to tell myself that all the time. Can I swear on this?
Yeah.
Just so I know.
Absolutely.
I used to like, care about this or, like, have that idea in my head. And now I can't really be bothered or give a fuck. Like, if you're living in a neighborhood that is with bars, like, specifically on Saint-Denis, the zoning there, there is no proximity law. So you could have every single storefront can be and should be a bar, because that's where they want these things to happen. And if you're going to move there and you're only sort of, like, the only thing you're going to give to the neighborhood is to take away and to cause problems and to cause noise complaints, you can fuck off and go back to, like, Bédurfey. Like, I don't care. Like, that's the kind of stuff that is now beyond frustrating. Like, you're just taking. You have this whole nightlife, you have this whole city to enjoy and to, like, be a part of, and your only way to participate is by making it worse for other people. Like, I can't be bothered.
Yeah, but, you know, it's tricky, right? What I've heard from folks in the sector is that because housing is such a big concern, right? We're in a housing crisis. Vacancy rates are around 1% in the province. You know, we're going to have more and more nightlife venues and residential apartments, homes, whatever, side by side. What do you guys think needs to change in terms of how that kind of, I don't know, cooperation, cohabitation is handled by the city? Maybe Oliver, I'll put it to you first.
Yeah, you know, obviously housing is something that we care about very deeply in our collective and, you know, just personally. Everything going on with Bill 31 and that you'll probably talk about in a lot more depth in the rest of your show. You know, we want to see housing availability and housing security improved. I think that's important in a lot of places, but especially in nightlife and especially in underground nightlife. You know, people in this scene really rely on access to housing and affordable housing inside the city. But at the same time, I think that especially now that the city's apparently opening itself to reconsidering its noise policy or coming up with one in the first place, I think it'd be really important for them to consider something that we've seen in other cities, which is the agent of change principle, which is just a principle that would put the onus, puts the burden on new buildings that go up near commercial establishments to adapt to the existing noise landscape basically around them. So rather than it being on these venues who have been there for decades and are important cultural and community and employment hubs in the city, rather than those being threatened by one disgruntled neighbor, which is most often the case. You know, a lot of the venues that have closed in the last 5-10 years, these, like, DIY spaces, these cultural spaces, it's often one persistent neighbor who closes them down, and then there goes a community space that is frequented by dozens of people. So if we want that to stop happening, I think it's so important that the city consider something like agent of change in their new policies.
Yeah, and so that kind of is, we haven't seen that yet, right, in the draft proposal that they've put out. Do you think that might be coming through? I know that in the wake of all this publicity around Turbo House and Diving Bell Social Club also closed down towards the end of last year, after basically this exact scenario happened. One neighbor repeatedly complained and complained and complained and caused problems. That had been floated, that we heard that this might be a possibility, but even in this draft policy, there's no mention of it. Why do you think that is?
Oh, because it would cost the people who are putting up these buildings too much money. So you can't, and if, like, a lot of your money coming into the city is from property taxes and things like this, like, you sort of can't ruffle those feathers. So they're kind of, like, I don't expect an agent of change rule to come at all. And I find this whole 24-hour thing to be a bit absurd because, like, you're not going to put policy in place that allows it to grow in the way that would be beneficial to anybody. You're just going to make everybody upset.
What do you mean by that? Yeah.
By...
Like, why would everybody be upset by the 24-hour zone policy?
Well, because you're already, like, having these issues at 11 o'clock at night. Imagine being in bed at 5 a.m. and these things are where the city has told you to do them. Like, people are going to start flocking to these neighborhoods to open bars, to open up discotheques, to open up after hours, to open up God knows what. And they're, it's still a mixed-use neighborhood. Like, they're still, like, on the main level on St. Denis, where I am, it's all commercial, but above it is all residential. Like, people live there. The only way you're going to get through that is by making people understand, like, this is where you're moving to. But, like, ultimately, at the end of the day, you still should be able to have a certain quality of life, no matter where you're living.
Yeah. I know something that was talked about was, this happened a little bit during the pandemic. The city offered, I think, micro grants for noise proofing and things like that. Okay, you're already laughing. Yeah, what is your kind of gauge on that?
Those only go so far. And in order to actually soundproof a place so that you're not disturbing people who live in your building or directly next to you, the cost is astronomical, and the city doesn't even come close to covering that. Not only that, but the places that need it the most, the Turbo Houses, the Lesko Griffs, the, you know, all these small places that are basically bars that have shows, are not even eligible. Like, I'm not eligible for a grant to soundproof the place. I spent, you know, $250,000 just soundproofing, and it still wasn't enough at the end of the day. So, like, it's also not a magic bullet. It's not a magic solution to, like, fix all these issues. You have to create the right community around you. You have to be able to communicate with your neighbors. Like, ultimately, the onus is on the people who are living there and trying to create, like, a space that everybody can live in harmony. Once you start adding these, like, you know, super intense, like, 24 hours, you can be here till 5 a.m., God knows what, like, that's not going to help anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I know one of the things that they talked about, and the city is doing a big public consultation on this nightlife policy, but in the draft policy itself, they say, you know, nightlife in the city should have more citizen participation. How do we make sure that that doesn't end up just being like a new form of nightlife NIMBYism, you know, that giving citizens more power, like residential home owners or apartment dwellers more power to just say, actually, you know, even though I moved onto the Plaza Saint-Hubert, I want Ausgang Plaza to be shut down. Or even though I moved onto Saint-Denis or just around the corner, I can't stand this show at Turbo House. Like, what needs to change so that citizen participation isn't just like a byword for the death of nightlife in the city?
I mean, putting in policy like the agent of change would definitely go a long way, but also just like sort of educating people on where they're moving. Like, you can't, you know, you can't blame Turbo House. You can't blame anybody else for doing things in a zone that the city has decided that's where they want you to do it. And there has to be some sort of give and take. There has to be more concrete rules, because you can call a noise complaint whenever you want. I could call a noise complaint at 11 a.m. if I wanted to, because my neighbor is mowing his lawn too loud. Like, there's no concrete rules and there's no set way. And if a cop shows up and decides, like, this is too loud and this is a problem, then that's the end of it. Like, there's no way to, like, figure this out. It is what it is. And it's at the discretion of whatever, you know, person decides to show up and be the authority on it. It's awful. Like, when we got our noise complaint, we didn't even speak to the inspector. We didn't speak to the people who made the complaint. They wouldn't tell us immediately where the complaint from or what day it was. So how do you expect us to change anything if you're giving us zero information?
Yeah, something else I've heard is just that it can be hard, maybe less so for bar and venue owners, but for folks who are looking to organize events, promoters, to find accessible space in the city, like space where it won't bother the neighbors, where you won't have the cops come, but also just like DIY spaces as more of these complaints come in. Oliver, what are you, and Fantôme in general, what are you hearing from folks working in the sector?
People lament the loss of all the spaces where those things were possible, and they worked tirelessly to find, you know, real estate where it may be possible to make new ones. And when they do, they work really hard to pull that off, and then they usually manage to do it for a couple of years before they get shut down. I think that restricting whatever new nightlife policy comes out to 24 hour zones, I think would be super detrimental. I think that, like, if there is progress to be made, for example, around noise, I'd want to see that everywhere. I'd want that to be something that people can access equitably, regardless of what, you know, subzone of a neighborhood they're in. Like, it's already tough enough in Montreal that we have all these different boroughs that have their own bylaws and their own processes for, like, getting permits for different things, and their own, like, quotas for how many types of certain businesses they want on certain roads. That's already enough of a nightmare. Having then zones within that where maybe we have to deal with this stuff in a different way, it seems like it's going to be super complicated, potentially lead to, like, real estate speculation within those, which is already tough enough. I haven't spoken to anyone who's asking for zones. Like, no one on the sort of, like, NGO side, on the community level, on the artist or organizer level, no one on a business owner level, no one in academia who studies this stuff. I haven't heard a single person suggest that zones would be a good idea.
And it also creates another barricade for young people to get into traditional bar and venue kind of spaces, where now landlords who own these buildings know that they're in a premium space and they can just jack up the rent to whatever you want. Like, a commercial lease can be whatever the landlord deems it's going to be. So you already have the same kind of, like, ideas coming out, the same old men doing the same thing over and over and over again, because there's so many blocks, and finances is one of the big ones. And then once you sort of, like, are in these areas, we're like, I could do something cool here. Me and my three friends can figure something out. Maybe we got 60 grand, we could do it. And they're like, fuck off. Like, rent is going to be $25,000 a month because you can be open 24 hours a day. And ultimately, it doesn't help anybody. Like, it's,
So some of the spaces that I know have come up, that people have been interested in the scene, you know, we're usually looking at a monthly, you know, before tax, before insurance, before utilities, before your financing, repayments for your initial renovations and soundproofing, before all of that, a monthly lease of, like, a minimum of 10K. If you've got a space that's even close to big enough to have the number of bathrooms and exits and all these other things that, and coat check, all these other things that you need in order to run events in a way that's, like, safe, never mind adding, you know, considerations for things like, okay, well, where are we going to put harm reduction? Where are we going to have, like, a space for someone to go if they're, you know, they can't handle, like, the level of noise or, like, crowd that's going on right now. You know, these are things that people are asking for, but it's hard enough to do the bare minimum right now. And absolutely, if we see an additional premium put on space like that, it's just going to cut more people out.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? That you talk to people in the sector, in nightlife, in whatever capacity, and people are like, well, it's about housing, it's about access to real estate, it's about rent, and that just doesn't seem to be a part of the official policy at all, you know, and to the point where I was at this demo to save Montreal 2424 the other week. They're a nightlife organization that had their budget totally cut this year in advance of the, you know, the public consultations from this policy. The city's line was basically just, you know, we have to wait until the policy gets approved, so you don't get the huge funding that you normally get from us. And basically the folks there were saying the city's priority seems to be at these, like, big industry players serving alcohol past 3 a.m. And not at the little guy. Like, is that kind of how it's feeling for the two of you?
Oh, absolutely. And when you look at a space that, like you can't pay a $10,000 rent doing, like, just regular gigs where people can just go watch a show, don't have to spend money, or, you know, can just enjoy themselves, you essentially become a drug dealer. Like, your job is to sell as much alcohol as you possibly can, because there's no way to stay open without alcohol sales. Like, if you're charging 10, 15 bucks for the ticket, and that's it, and your capacity is already capped at 150, or whatever that happens to be, 150, 200 people. But ultimately, that's not going to be enough to pay any of your bills. And then, even then, you have to be like, oh, I have to sell out every single night. Like, there's no kind of, like, middle ground. This is, like you said, it's very clearly a way for the Bell Centers and the, you know, the A5s of the world to just make as much money as they possibly can, and everybody else kind of, like, has to deal with what's left.
Yeah. You know, Sarah Schulman has this really nice line, activists win policy changes, but bureaucracies implement them. And I think that's really what we're seeing. You know, Montreal 2424 has done 3 great years of research. They put out tremendous reports, worked with, like, international leaders in, like, nightlife studies. They've helped all these pilot, projects happen of, like, 24-hour nightlife. And now we're seeing the city go, okay, cool, thanks. Now we're going to go and let some of these huge players rake in additional profit and leave nothing for anyone else.
Yeah, it is kind of funny to look through the draft policy, even though it is vague, because some of the things they call for, like a table de consultation about nightlife and these kinds of, I guess, sort of organizational, I don't know, oversight mechanisms are like things that you already had an NGO doing. And now I guess the city just wants a new one, or maybe we'll go back to 2424 after the consultation is completed. We don't really know. And I think that's part of the struggle too, is just from what you're saying, you're working in the sector and you have no concrete idea about like what the city is actually going to do that will help you.
No, they're using the 24-hour thing like a mallet to hit everybody over the head with it and be like, look what we're doing, look what we're doing, look what we're doing. But like, if that doesn't come with other things to support it, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, if there's 24-hour bars and clubs and venues, and there's not 24-hour public transportation that's close by, then, you know, you're still not solving the problem. If you had 24 hours, let's say you had 24-hour metros, past 3 o'clock, they're running every 20 minutes, great, wonderful. Everybody, that means everybody has an extra $30 in their pocket at the end of the day. Like, instead of paying $30 to get home, I pay $3 to get home. Like, it's these little things that, like, oh, this can also, people who just live at night could be able to use these services. It's not just about people who want to go party. Like, it would be a boon to the city, but, like, ultimately, the only people who are going to see any money out of this or any sort of, like, change out of this are people who already have the resources to sort of reap all of these benefits.
Yeah, it's so classic. I mean, like, some, it definitely goes way beyond nightlife entertainment workers who need access to these services at night. You know, like, everyone who works in healthcare, people who work in security, people who just get up a little bit earlier than other people, run like a bakery. I'm sure that they'd love if the metro ran an hour earlier than it does now. But, you know.
Yeah, if we weren't staring down massive budget cuts to the STM, I think, like, what, 200 people are getting fired, something like that.
Yeah, and they say that this year they won't impact service, but they're like, you know, next year it really might. You know, so it seems fine maybe right now, but we were already close to losing hours this year, and we probably will next year if it keeps going this way.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing from the two of you then is that all these issues, transit, housing, safety, they're all intertwined. And if the city isn't doing enough to tackle any one of them individually, it won't be able to really do anything as a whole.
No. Yeah. You're going to end up with like a horror show. Like, it's going to be like, I've done enough nuit blanches and like things that the bars open till 6 a.m. And I also don't think people are ready for it. Like, we're not just, you can't just be like, hey, now you can just be hammered all the time. And like, that's what a lot of people will kind of take from this. It won't be the situation where like, oh, I can do some weird shit at weird hours of the day. It's like, oh yeah, I get to get fucking blasted. And it's like, oh, fun. Like, that's not what I want to deal with. That's not what my employees want to deal with. That's not what my other patrons want to deal with, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't get drunk in parks past midnight, but you can get drunk in bars past 3 a.m., maybe we have a problem. Who knows? You know, any final words? I think what we're hearing is, yeah, agent of change, definitely strongly recommended. Is there anything else that we need to see in the coming year?
I'd just say that I absolutely encourage everyone who participates in nightlife in Montreal, whether it's like as an artist or an organizer or simply a private citizen who happens to appreciate our cultural scene, to attend these consultations. Just show up. Whatever your angle on nightlife is, go there. Be honest about it. Show that nightlife is about more than people just getting wasted, and that we're not just asking to be able to open things for 24 hours. We need transit. We need food. We need space. It's a much bigger problem than the city likes to pretend.
Yeah. I mean, everybody should feel welcome to participate in nightlife at, like, all levels. Like, it's, like, a very strange situation where you have all these people who I think just are not participating because they feel like, oh, that's a loud club. That's a loud venue. I don't want to go there. But it's like, you should. Maybe it'll change something and you'd be able to participate and like your life in the city a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we all hope for, right? Is that Montreal becomes, you know, more affordable again, more fun again, and that, yeah, we can all have a good time. Well, thank you both so much for coming on and chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. That was Oliver Anthony from Friend Home and Sergio De Silva of Turbo House speaking about Montreal's new nightlife policy. That policy will be presented in a public meeting next Tuesday at 6 p.m. at 155 Rue Notre Dame Est. You can find more information on the City of Montreal's website. Now, there's another event happening basically right now that you should check out if you're in the neighborhood. Today at 5:30, the Park X Action Committee is hosting a rally in support of a group of Park X tenants facing eviction. That's happening in front of the Borough Council meeting at 405 Rue Ogilvy, close to Park Metro. I spoke with CAPE organizer Amy Darvish about that event and the rise in evictions that precipitated it. Here's our conversation. So thanks so much for chatting with me. Can I just get you to introduce yourself first?
Sure. My name is Amy Darwish. I work for the Comité d'Action de Parc Extension. We support Parc Extension tenants in defending their housing rights.
So tell me a little bit about the event that you guys are putting on tonight at 5:30.
So tonight we're organizing in a rally in solidarity with a building of tenants on Durocher who are at risk of eviction. It's the second eviction attempt that they faced in less than a year. Their landlord first sent them a notice in June, withdrew the case, in May, withdrew the case, and then sent them another one in December. He's seeking to try to enlarge their building, which we believe is just a tactic that's being used to force them out. This is a source of an enormous amount of stress for tenants. A lot of them are elders. They've lived in the neighborhood for many, many years. So we're coming together tonight to affirm our solidarity with the tenants, to support them in their struggle. We also are calling on the borough of Villeray-Saint-Michel Park Extension to refuse the landlord permits for this eviction. We also want to call on them to implement a ban on all kinds of permits that could possibly lead to eviction.
Yeah. So just more about this specific case, you said that, you know, you don't think that the enlargement of a building is really going to happen. You think this is a false premise to get the tenants out. What is it that makes you think that, I guess? How common is this kind of tactic in Park X?
Unfortunately, it's a tactic we're seeing more and more. Often landlords use it as a way to force all the tenants' departure. Like, they try to get a permit, they use it as a pretext to force everyone's departure, and then they just turn around and rent the building again, and they never do the actual repairs. We've seen about 30 cases of this in the last year in four separate buildings, and it's something we're seeing more and more. The borough did put in place a regulation in 2020, but it obviously isn't strong enough, and this is the way that the landlords are increasingly finding to get around it. This is partly why we think there needs to be a ban on all kinds of permits that lead to eviction.
Yeah, and you're not the only housing committee, right? I know, for instance, in Verdun, they're also calling on all permits that would lead to eviction, but I'm curious about this 2020 change that you say isn't really seeing much effect. It's not stopping landlords from using these tactics. What was the change that the borough put in place?
So in 2020, they put some restrictions around certain kind of permits. for subdivisions and for fusions in buildings larger than 6 units. The problem is it doesn't restrict enlargements altogether, and that's the loophole that landlords are now exploiting. It's, and you're absolutely right, this is not unique to park extension. This is happening across the city. I think in a study that the RCLAC did and released this year, we've seen evictions going up by about 132%, which is very much consistent with what we're seeing on the ground. We're increasingly seeing landlords using every kind of tactic imaginable to push tenants out. And in a context where Park X is gentrifying very, very quickly, it's fueling even more of these kinds of evictions.
Yeah. And why do you think it is that, you know, politicians, decision makers are so reluctant to implement the kinds of, I guess, stronger restrictions or larger policy actions that would actually stop these kinds of evictions from happening?
I mean, I would say on the Quebec level, the CAC is very much the political wing of the landlord lobby. We see it we see it through Bill 31. We see it in their refusal to even restrict evictions for elders. We see it in their choice to abandon the longest standing social housing program and abandon it in favor of a program that would make it possible for developers to get money for affordable housing. What we see on the borough level, however, is reluctance along the lines of, occupying landlords might want to enlarge their units so that they can their families can stay in the neighborhood. It's something that keeps families on the island of Montreal. I think what we really take issue with is that there are families that are being forced off the island. It's just that the families who are being forced off the island are by and large low-income tenants, immigrants, racialized people, families who are being driven out of their neighborhoods and are struggling to find housing anywhere. This is part of the reason why we think this absolutely needs to change.
Yeah, and you said that, Park X is gentrifying really rapidly. What are some of the signs of that? Like, what exactly are you seeing in the neighborhood right now?
So we're seeing a real spike in all kinds of different types of evictions. This is only one of many kinds of tactics that landlords use to force people out. And so we've seen a big spike in repossessions over the last year. We've also seen a lot of instances of harassment where landlords just persistently pressure tenants and make their lives unlivable until they decide to move out. We also see a lot of instances where they simply tell tenants, we need the apartment for renovations, we're not renewing your lease, relying on things that don't even have any kind of legal basis. The other thing we're seeing is sort of a consequence of gentrification is that the rents are really through the roof. It used to be not uncommon, even just a few years ago, to be able to find four and a half for maybe $700-$800 a month. You're lucky now if you find something for $1,400-$1,500. Like, everything has doubled or even tripled. What we're also seeing is just tenants really feeling the squeeze, that people often stick it out in housing situations that are really not ideal, that they stick it out despite the apartment being in poor shape. People often end up having to share apartments with other families, just as a way of being able to stay in the neighborhood. Another unfortunate thing we're seeing is people ending up having to pay pretty much the totality of their revenue in rent and having nothing left over for food. So these are all some of the different ways in which gentrification is wreaking havoc in tenants' lives here in Park X.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned Bill 31, the contentious housing bill that the CAC is pushing through probably this month, later this month. Park Extension is a neighborhood where organizers have used lease transfers really tactically so that people in this neighborhood can stay in the neighborhood. You know, when one family leaves, another family can come in and not see a big rent hike in between tenants. What will this bill do for the people that you guys are helping at CAPE?
Yes, absolutely. So I would say for a lot of tenants now, it's very difficult to find any kind of housing, in part because of the rents being so high, and also because of rampant discrimination on the part of landlords. Many of them openly declare preference for students and for professionals, are hesitant to rent to families, and are hesitant to rent to immigrants. It was already difficult even before Bill 31 to see lease transfers through. We would see landlords pretty much across the board trying to refuse them. But at least in the past, if tenants persisted, in the overwhelming amount of cases, they were able to get the transfer through. And for a lot of tenants, especially people who are living on low incomes, especially tenants who are immigrants, especially families, it was a way that they could still find housing in the neighborhood. It was also one of the few things that was maybe keeping rents in check a little bit. What we're worried is that one of the last remaining checks on rent increases is now going to be removed, and it's going to fuel the skyrocketing rents even more than it has been in the last few years.
Yeah, and what I've been hearing from some folks is that, you know, also the way that evictions happen needs to change. Bill 31 has provisions that would give tenants access to more money from their landlords if they got evicted, but it doesn't really do anything to prevent these evictions in the first place. But you know, the CAC is really not showing any interest in preventing evictions. You know, what are you calling on from the borough, from the city of Montreal? What can they do to stop this? Because there seems to be at least a smidge more political will at the local level.
Exactly. So I'd say with Bill 31, the only change it would make is that it would be the landlord's responsibility to open a file at the housing tribunal, and it would make the damages a little bit higher. Unfortunately, if you're being forced out of your apartment, in this particular context, the amount you'd receive for damages wouldn't get you very far. It's not enough to actually act as a disincentive to carry out evictions, and there's absolutely nothing that actually would stop evictions. So, yeah, there's absolutely very little in Bill 31 that actually does protect tenants. So part of the reason why we've refocused our energy on boroughs is that they do have power on the permits that they emit for different kinds of renovations. And often these renovations are things that get to be used as a pretext to evict tenants, either under the guise of major renovations and renovictions, either under the guise of enlarging people's units. What we see is that in most cases, the landlord has no intention of actually following through with these repairs. In most instances, they just put, you know, maybe a new coat of paint, maybe a new bathroom, and then they hike the rent again. So what we think it's absolutely necessary that the boroughs, both in, you know, Villeray-Saint-Michel Park Extension and across the city, tighten their regulations. And there's been recent movements that demonstrate that this is possible. I believe yesterday the borough of Mercier-Hochelaga-Demesne just announced that they were going to be implementing a ban on all fusions across their entire territory. I think what this demonstrates is that it is possible for things to happen, and it's absolutely necessary that we keep the pressure going on the boroughs to put something in place to protect tenants against evictions.
Yeah, and if folks want to join the demo tonight, you know, where and when do they go?
So we will be gathering in front of the borough office in Park Extension. It's located at 405. We're going to be gathering at 5:30 p.m. There's going to be speeches and music. And we're going to be supporting the tenants as they go inside to call on the borough. We hope to see everyone there.
All right. Well, Amy, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Jules.
Gem Art Center is pleased to present When Big Man Talk, the exhibit. Come experience a captivating fusion of paintings, photography, and immersive virtual reality experience and more. To kick off the exhibit, Jam Arts is presenting the film African Redemption, The Life and Legacy of Marcus Garvey, screening January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. Then experience When Big Man Talk, the exhibit, from February 3 to 10 at Galerie Lucie Michel, and after that from February 11 to 14 at the UNIA. For tickets, call 438-507-9258 or head to jam-montreal.com and click Jam Arts Center.
The National Assembly is back in session. That means we're one step closer to the passage of Contentious Housing Bill 31. Last Saturday, the RECLAC organized what may be Montreal's last big protest before the bill is adopted. Spokesman Cedric Dussault explains why.
Well, the bill first, the main problem with the bill is that it does not address in any way all the problems that are related to the housing crisis. It doesn't act upon the explosion of rents that we're seeing in Quebec year over year. It does not address properly the multiplication of evictions that has been happening recently. But also, on top of that, you have a bill that is removing rights from tenants, which is the lease transfer.
In Quebec, lease transfers are often used as a last resort to prevent landlords from jacking up rents between tenants. If Bill 31 is passed, though, landlords will be able to refuse a lease transfer without cause, and tenants will lose a long-held right.
Bill 31 wants to take away our right to lease transfers, which is unacceptable. It's going to be disastrous because it's our only tool right now to fight the housing crisis. It's all we've got left, and to take it away is just unthinkable.
Speaking now is Lena, who runs the popular Tenant Rights Quebec account on Instagram. She says that under the CAC, tenant rights are falling by the wayside.
Well, our rights are at risk, and it's the first time in a long time that a housing bill wants to take away rights from tenants rather than adding to them. In Quebec, we have a lot of protections already. Like, compared to other provinces, we're really fortunate, but that's because we fought so much in the past for our rights to be so strong.
A big target of protesters' anger is Housing Minister Francie-Elaine Duronceau, a real estate developer who was recently sanctioned by the Parliamentary Ethics Commissioner for favoring a developer friend in an abusive fashion.
The housing minister who's proposing this bill, her interests lie with the real estate agent friends that she was a part of before she became a housing minister. I don't know how she got this job, but it doesn't feel appropriate to me to assign someone with that background, with those interests, to represent those of tenants, because really, it's supposed to be about protecting us, that position.
But it's not just the minister who's the target of protesters' ire. The folks at Saturday's protest say the CAC government as a whole is hostile to tenants and low-income Quebecers.
And we have right now a government that we kind of know on which side they're on, which is not the side of people that are oppressed, that maybe have problem paying for their housings. They are really for the landlords, basically.
Laurence Blanchard is a community organizer in Petite Patrie, where the protest took place. She says Bill 31 would make life even less affordable for the residents there.
The neighborhood has gone through a lot of gentrification, Petite Patrie, within, the past 10, 20, 30 years. And now the prices of places are really going up, and there's families that are forced to quit to go find something cheaper because they cannot afford to live in their neighborhood anymore, you know? So that's also something that a lease transfer helps, is that if you have a good place within the neighborhood and you want to lease it to your family, your friends, and stuff like that, without having it increased by the landlords, then you won't be able to do that anymore if the bill passes.
Protesters say the bill couldn't come at a worse time. The province says that visible homelessness has more than doubled in the past 2 years, and the CMHC found that last year, rents increased by over 7%, faster than both the increase in wages and the rate of inflation.
In a province where there actually is such a high proportion of renters, this is the difference at this point between having access to a home and being on the street, and people are increasingly having to be on the street because they can't afford rent.
And it's with that in mind that Montreal renters will keep taking to the streets before and after the bill is passed.
We are here, we stand strong together, and we will not take this bullshit. We don't want this bullshit.
I'm Jules Bujel with files from Eliza Lee. Thanks for listening. All right. You are listening to the Local Journalism and Initiative Roundup here on CKUT. My name is Jules Bujel, and I am your host for another 11 minutes. We're going to close out the show with a story I did at the end of January about an eviction attempt that happened in Verdun and how the tenants were able to avoid it. You're listening to CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm Jules Bujel. It's every tenant's worst nightmare. You open up your letterbox or your inbox to find a notice that says you're being evicted. That's what happened to a group of Verdun tenants late last year.
Well, the notice told us that we needed to leave at the end of June, and it was an eviction notice. So it was pretty hard to take because it was just before, you know, New Year's Eve, and we thought it was pretty fishy, like the way it was written, and we right away we talked to each other and decided that we needed to take action because it didn't feel right, you know.
This is Danny Bujold, one of the tenants of the fourplex on Boulevard La Salle, which we're not naming further due to privacy concerns. He says the notice was a shock, but also started ringing alarm bells. What was so strange was the reason given for the eviction. Here's Kay Lockyer from the Citizen Action Committee of Verdun, or CACV, which has been supporting the tenants in their appeal.
They received what is basically a standard notice of eviction, and what the box that was checked off on this notice was for change of use, in French, changement d'affectation. And the specific reason that was cited on this notice was that the landlord was going to be turning the units into social housing that was subsidized by the OMHM, our municipal housing office here in Montreal, under a program that doesn't have a name in English, the Programme Subvention Loyer. It's basically like subsidized housing, but semi-private, semi-public.
Despite being working parents, the tenants got together and got organized, contacting the CACV, the Quebec Housing Tribunal, and their member of National Assembly, Quebec Solidaire's Alejandra Zacamendes. She was able to confirm with the OMHM that there was no agreement for any kind of rent subsidy program for their building.
I was pissed. I mean, when I heard about the situation, the first things that came to our mind was, is this true, right? We were really frustrated. Every eviction for us, it's a challenge. And then when we look at the information in the eviction notice, and then we went to the Office Municipal d'Habitation de Montréal, and they confirmed us that it's not true, that what it said in that notice is a lie, because there's no contract, there's no program with the contractor, there's nothing, and so that proved us that he's using an illegal notice.
The tenants say there were other red flags too, including the identity of the man who served them the notices, Alex Lepage. CKUT has attempted to reach Lepage for comment without any success.
Well, it's been difficult because the person in question just came at our apartment and told us he bought the place and he was a new owner, but we didn't have any proof of that, and it's pretty complicated to check with Ville de Montréal and all that stuff to see if it's really true, and he told us stuff that didn't make any sense for us, so it's been a tough process.
One of the things that seemed strange was the choice to kick out tenants who were already struggling.
I think what really alerted them that something was off was that the landlord told them to sign up themselves for social housing, that they should get on the waiting list. And also these people, many of the tenants in the building qualify for social housing. They meet the criteria. So they just right off the bat said this doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that I would be evicted from my apartment for social housing when I myself could be a recipient of social housing. Why, you know, if you were turning this actually into a PSL, why wouldn't I have priority and right to occupancy?
We're all parents.
Yeah.
I just got my first child. She's 7 months old. Danny has two kids. Natasha has two kids as well. We cannot find another place for a family that would be affordable and that would fit us all.
Speaking now is Roxane du Bouc du Bal, another of the tenants on Boulevard La Salle.
The thing is, we're all in a very like vulnerable situation financially. And when we received the notice, it said that they were going to put people in need instead of us that are already in a situation where we also are not like fortunate enough to go live somewhere else. So that's kind of the irony. So that's why we're like, no, we have to fight this.
It was pretty weird, and it was a changement d'affectation under the name of an organization that just produced like affordable units, and it felt wrong because like Roxane said, the rent every single month is a good price for us. It's like already affordable, and we're not gonna be able to find another apartment in Verdun. The last few years it went up so high in prices, so it's just like it felt wrong, yeah.
In her follow-up on the case, Alejandra Sacaméndez learned this isn't the only time this type of fraudulent eviction has been tried. She says the way evictions are handled needs to change.
It's always on the tenant shoulders to prove the how it works. And for us, what's important is that we need to better define how we define evictions, and it has to be the Tribunal Administratif du Logement that allows for an eviction or not at the beginning, not after the emission notice is given.
The CACV, for their part, say in this hot housing market, fraudulent evictions are all too common. They want a moratorium on all permits that would lead to eviction until the housing crisis abates.
The way that we do evictions in this province is extremely flawed. A landlord can serve these eviction notices without having any kind of permits they don't have to have any proof that they have a deal to operate social housing, for example, and that this eviction is on legitimate grounds. They just have to serve these eviction notices. So if these tenants hadn't have been so proactive, and if they hadn't have informed themselves about their rights and gone to the proper resources, they could have easily have accepted the eviction, and I don't know where they would be. They could have signed, and they'd be in a very tricky spot.
Instead, after organizing and speaking to the media, these tenants will get to keep their apartments. In conversations with the tenants at RDI, Lepage said the notices were for a project that was never completed, and he won't be pursuing them further. Now, Denis and Roxane say they want others to learn from their example.
Well, I want people to know that they can take action and defend their rights, and it's worth it. It's not easy, it's difficult, and but just don't leave your apartment without a fight, because it's really worth it. Even though you wait and you have a lot of phone calls to make and miss work, it's still gonna, you're still gonna save money and be able to stay in your neighborhood and not have to move, in a fishy fashion, illegal fashion or something like that,
Yeah. And if you feel that it's a lot to take upon yourself, you can reach out. Like I said, we reach out to our neighborhood committee, and that helped us a lot.
I'm Jules Bijal. Thanks for listening.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
You are listening to CKUT broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at CKUT.ca. I'm Jules Bujel, and I'm your host of the Local Journalism Initiative Roundup, where I share stories I've been working on with the support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Today, you've heard about Montreal's new nightlife policy and what folks in the sector think the city needs to prioritize, as well as a bunch of different testimonials basically about Montreal's housing crisis, the proposed Bill 31, and how the way that evictions work in the city needs to change. You can find more of my stories online on CKUT's website. That's CKUT.ca. And if you click the local news tab, that's where you find what I've been working on. So that's also at CKUT.ca/LJI. If you're interested in yourselves making some news for the station, we have a news collective that's up and running now. Our volunteer Sequoia Kim is spearheading that initiative, and you can always get involved to produce Off the Hour Fridays or any of our other collective news shows. You can send me an email, jules@ckut.ca, if you're interested in joining that, but there are always more ways to get involved. And that's been our show for today. Thank you all so much for listening, and have a gorgeous rest of your Friday. Ooh, not Friday, your Tuesday evening. I was thinking it was the end of the week, but unfortunately, we've just begun. Thanks so much.
Good night, good night, good night. To everybody out there in Radio Land, this is The Sound of Soul with your host, Butcher T, filling in for the man, Ricky D. Playing the platters that matters, like Ricky D would say. But also you can...
Hi, this is the Wet Cheer Brigade, and keep it locked on
CKUT 90.3 Montreal.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
90.3 FM is proud to rebroadcast the following program entirely in the Mohawk language. The Mohawk, or Ganyatgahaga, are the original people of the unceded traditional territory known as Montreal, or Jojaake. The Ganyatgahaga, or people of the Flint, have two communities close by, and they are working hard at revitalizing their language. This program is part of those efforts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR Reviving Ganasadage Radio. And now, listen to Jojaake's indigenous language on CKUT.
Okay.